This is Andrew Kavanagh here with Jesse Forrest, and we're talking about the fundamentals of writing great copy. We're going to talk a lot about fundamentals because more than anything else, writing great copy is a mindset, and if you focus in on the key fundamentals of selling and writing, your copy will be far more powerful than if you get caught up in a pile of technical details. But before we even talk about copywriting fundamentals, there are a couple of key business fundamentals you want to focus on that actually affect every part of your copy. The first one is your business strategy or your client's business strategy if you're writing copy for someone else. In other words, what is the overall goal you're trying to achieve with your business? Very much neglected, but I can guarantee you that actually affects your copy. The second thing is your personal income strategy. And there's three things in this call I actually want you to write down. The first is, how much money do you want to make every week? Second, how many hours do you want to work every week to make it? And third, how many weeks vacation do you want to take every year?
So, Andrew, why is this so vital when you write copy?
I'm glad you asked that. Now, if you imagine, let's just imagine you're running your own business online, and your strategy is just to have a business that you completely set and forget. You only want to work, say, 5 hours a week. Well, that actually affects your copy, because if I say to you, well, you know, the best way to increase your response is for you to personally tell people to call you and you personally answer the phone and take orders and ask questions of your prospects, well, you ain't going to do that in 5 hours a week. So the strategy actually affects the way we write copy to a certain effect. And if you're working for a copywriting client, you have to look at their overall strategy and their personal strategy, so you get an idea of, okay, how does my copy have to fit into that strategy, or how do we have to find ways around so that we can do what we know is more effective and still fit in with that strategy. So there are actually very important points there. So before, at the end of this call, I'm actually going to give you one major task, and that is to write down your personal income strategy, which is how much money do you want to make every week, how many hours do you want to work every week to make it, and how many weeks vacation do you want to take every year. And it seems a bit strange at the start of a copywriting call, but I'm telling you, if you focus in on those business strategies and personal income strategies, they make a huge difference. Now we're going to move on to copywriting fundamental number one, find a hungry market. Let me tell you a story. Now, we're going to go into this later, but stories are a great copywriting technique because they tend to engage the listener. I was living in Western Queensland many years ago, back when I was actually married to another woman, and the guy who lived next door to us, this is out west, we're all stockmen, and, you know, it's just like, for Americans, it's like cowboy land. For Australians, you know what it's like out west. And next door was this crazy guy who'd spent half his life in jail, a lot of it in Bogger Road Jail, and anyone who's lived in Queensland knows Bogger Road Jail is one of the roughest jails in Australia. It was actually closed down because the jail was too rough. It has to be a pretty bad jail to get closed down because it's too rough. And this guy was a complete mad guy. He didn't seem to have any control over his primal instincts. He loved those parking meters. He said to me one day, oh, I love those parking meters because if you grab someone by the back of the head, you can smash their head into it really easy. he was in his own world. And he was a stockman, one of the best horse riders you ever see in your life. Just could get on a horse. He had a mad horse, get on that thing and ride it across the fields. Anyway, my wife would bake him this huge dish of custard and make cream for it, and he'd eat it. One time he told me he went out to a church do, and they had seafood and prawns on the platter, you know. And he was there with one of his friends who also had trouble controlling his primal instincts. And these guys were just forking in the seafood and these prawns as fast as they could possibly eat them. And, you know, he was saying to me, yeah, we were just stuffing them in. And then I thought he was getting ahead of me, and so I was eating them faster. And, you know, other people were getting sick watching us, and oh man, I must have eaten maybe a full bucket of prawns in that whole night. And I'm like flabbergasted, like, this is what you do at a church function. And he says to me, yeah, oh man, I was so full I nearly couldn't eat my cake and custard when I got home. Now the point of that story is, and these were big, this is big cake and custard, I just couldn't believe that anybody could eat that in one sitting. But the point of the story is, if you find a hungry market, it's very easy to appeal to them. So in copywriting and in your copy and in your business, what you're looking for is a hungry market. Most copy fails, most businesses fail because they're not selling something the market wants. If I went to Lester and I said, hey, Lester, how would you like this really groovy pile of lentils and spinach? I would be likely to get beaten up. In fact, in Lester's case, there's a very serious chance I would have got beaten up. But of course, if I go to Lester and say, Lester, would you like some prawns? Or even if I just cooked some prawns, Lester would be over in a minute. The point is, finding that hungry market. Don't try to sell something the market doesn't want. And we're going to go in a more depth in a different way, because one of the biggest keys is finding a hungry market that's easy to get to. You see, the most vital, diabolical, destructive marketing mistake people make is that they get a product and then they try to find a market for that product. Well, that's all reversed. What you should do is you find your hungry market that's easy to get to, and then you create a product for that hungry market. Any discussion of copywriting wouldn't be complete if you didn't talk about Gary Halbert's very famous coat of arms letter. And just in case you haven't heard of the coat of arms letter, Gary Halbert wrote this letter. I believe he wrote it to Candlelight on a crate, because they'd taken all his furniture away because he'd spent his money on copywriting tape so he could learn how to write copy. And the letter was basically selling a document that had your name on it, cut with a coat of arms on it. One page sales there. If you read the letter, you think it was pretty... They've refined this letter over the years. If you read it, you think, well, you know, it's not exactly the most brilliant piece of sales copy I've ever seen, but yet it's the most mailed sales letter in history. I believe they've mailed over 400 million copies of this letter. Now, the interesting thing about that coat of arms, and the reason I bring it up, what I said before, find a hungry market that's easy to get to. Well, the interesting thing about the coat of arms letter is, because he was mailing to people with a specific name, he had found a way to use an ordinary phone book to get a list. So he found the sweet spot in the names in the phone book. So that's an example of finding a hungry market that's easy to get to. We did the same thing. We're doing the same thing now with our marketing natural health program. I specialize in helping natural health professionals market themselves. And we actually realized we deal a lot with massage therapists and EFT practitioners and yoga teachers. And it suddenly occurred to us, you know, how are we going to find these people? Because online it's actually not that easy to get to those niches through search engine optimization or anything else. And it suddenly occurred to us, we can just look them up in the phone book. Send them a postcard, drive them a website, or send them a sales letter. So, again, find a hungry market that's easy to get to. And this gets even more interesting. I spoke recently at the American Vinyasa Yoga Teacher Training course in Austin, Texas, at the Crossings. I talked to that market about how to market themselves. I went through a whole pile of different strategies, like getting referrals and all sorts of different things. And I covered very briefly marketing yourself on the internet. And you know what all those people came up to me afterwards and asked me about? How do you do this marketing yourself on the internet thing? Now, if I was to go on the internet and try to sell internet marketing, I can tell you that's really, really hard work, because there's just so much competition for it, right? But if you find a market that's not a niche market that's not being hit so hard, for example, these yoga teachers, that market was exceptionally hungry for the most basic online marketing information that just about everybody in this call would already know, like autoresponders. This client I was dealing with today was like, oh wow, you can send out these emails automatically? Like, this was just some sort of revelation. Wow, you know? So there's a whole world out there. So the point of that is, again, find a hungry market that's easy to get to, and can you niche into a hungry market? I've arranged an interview with Quentin Brown, who does MP3 Soundstream. I think you know him, Jesse. And he has over 50 niched websites. Now, very interesting, because what he did, and on the interview with Quentin, he'll explain exactly how he did it, but what he did was, whenever he had a customer who was in a different niche, so he had MP3 Soundstream for radio stations so they could stream their radio shows, then he had MP3 Soundstream for schools and so on. So he took notes, kept details of his clients, and he looked at where they were coming from. As soon as it looked like there was a particular group of clients who were falling into another niche, he'd create another niche website. And I can tell you, Quentin is doing very well indeed. And okay, so that's an example of getting yourself good niche, get yourself niched online so that you can find the hungry market that's easy to get to. Now I want to talk just briefly about finding the low-hanging fruit online. If you use the Overture inventory tool, search term inventory tool, what we did is we were working with bird flu. So we went on that Overture search term inventory tool and we looked at the terms there, then we went to Google and we saw what pages were coming up at the top of Google. And if you get the Google PageRank toolbar, Google toolbar has a page rank on every page when you go to it. Well, if you find pages that are like zero, page rank 0, 1, and then in the top few results for Google, you'll find those pages will be, those search terms will be very easy to optimize for. In our case, we optimized for how to prevent bird flu, and we went to number one on Google in 48 hours. If you were to search on Yahoo for how to prevent bird flu, nearly the first two pages of results on Yahoo are virtually all us in some way or form. So that's an example of finding another hungry market that's easy to get to. People were worried about catching bird flu. We gave them an information product on how to prevent bird flu. Yeah, so you can find the low-hanging fruit by using Overture search term inventory tool. There's other tools I know you're going to mention, Jesse. Now, if the traffic's not cheap, if you search around, you can't find, you know, every page you go to is page rank 5, 6, or 7, and they all seem to be really heavy, really professional online marketers and great operators. Well, you can look at doing joint ventures with those people who have lists and traffic. So you search for websites, same way, go to Google, and you can also check their Alexa ranking, which will tell you how much traffic they're actually getting. You can see if they're capturing email addresses on their site, because the easiest market, generally speaking, online to get to is if someone has a responsive email list of people, then you can just send an email to them with your offer and then send them to your sales page. Joint venture with those sites and list owners, and here's a real key: niche your product or service to their list or site so you make it unique for them. And I'll give you one more tip before I let Jesse go into a few other secrets. If you go to paypal.com and you search in PayPal stores in your niche category, the way you do that is you go PayPal stores, you'll see the shops, the link right down the bottom, and you'll see shop categories after you click on that link on the left hand side of the page. If you click on one of these categories, you'll see a big long list of vendors, and each vendor has a number in brackets next to the description of what they sell. That's the number of verified buyers they have, and because they're selling through PayPal, they have an email address of all those buyers, and their list will be much larger than that because most PayPal buyers haven't verified their email address yet. So if you can find a vendor who has perhaps a non-competitive product or service to yours, or online it could even be competitive, often you can talk those guys into mailing to their list. They may not even realize that their list is of value to begin with, so you can often do some really great deals that way. Again, an example of finding a hungry market that's easy to get to. Now we're going to go on to how, because Jesse, you said this to me the other day, one of the biggest things, reasons people write such crappy copy is because they don't really understand their prospects properly in the first place. They haven't really got any depth of understanding. And so I wanted to ask you a question here. How can people properly research their target market and get a deeper understanding of their prospects?
Good question and good information there, Andrew. I think, and I mentioned this to you the other day, I think one of the biggest mistakes people make when they write copy, and not just people who are not copywriters writing their own copy, but copywriters as well, I think one of the biggest mistakes people make is they don't research their target market, or they don't really understand their prospect well enough. And I think it really boils down to just doing basic research, and that's, you know, what we're going to cover on this call, is how do you get that deep understanding? Because if you don't understand your prospect, if you don't understand your market and their behaviors, then it makes it really difficult to try and hit those hot buttons that make them buy. But before I get into that, I actually want to make a comment on something you mentioned a little earlier, which is about micro-niching a niche. And I brought this up at the Global Information Summit, which was in 2004, when we were talking about, they were brainstorming a product on back pain, and they were going to interview all of these different experts on back pain and what's the, you know, what's the best way to cure back pain and give you relief? And anyway, people from the audience were giving ideas, and I had an idea, and that was back pain is so widespread. There's so many people with back pain. So instead of going after this huge market, which is possible and you can be successful at, instead, why not find, and you know, to get a really high response from your advertising, why not just micro niche it? So you could do back pain for office workers. You could do back pain for builders or laborers. You could do back pain for mothers or pregnant mothers, and give tailored solutions on those. And that way you can segregate your market in a good way, much smaller, and get to know really those prospects, those individual smaller markets better. You can come up with some really hard-hitting copy from that. So that really ties into getting to know your target market and really understanding your prospects. So I'd like to go into that. We're going to give four techniques on researching your market online, because I know on this call there's a lot of people who are into online copy. And these techniques, even if you don't have a website, even if you're not doing business on the internet, you could still go online, and because, you know, no doubt your prospects, like most people, use the internet, you could still use the techniques we're about to give you, and you could go online, research these markets, research your prospects, and then use them in your offline advertising. It's applicable to both. So number one, keyword location tools. You can actually go online and download a free software program called Good Keywords, and it's available from goodkeywords.com. And you can use that to find what keywords your prospects are actually typing into the search engines. You can also use the Overture or the Google AdWords Sandbox search tool to find popular keywords. And those tools are available from adwords.google.com. That's adwords.google. Now, those tools are really great because you want to find out what your prospects are typing in. For example, I had a client that was selling an eczema cream. So he went to goodkeywords.com, downloaded the program, and he typed in, it's a very easy to use program. He just typed in eczema. What it did, it generated, you know, several hundred keywords that people are typing in that are associated to eczema. So, I mean, that right there is a great research tool to, you know, to find what people are typing in. And, you know, through those, you might actually find some book titles that people are searching for. And then you'll find that book that might have some great information in it that might give you a really good profile of your market. So that's one way to find and to research your market better. Did you have anything you wanted to add to that, Andrew?
Yeah, I think you had a little bit of a problem there where the line dropped out for a second. You did actually mention the inventory.overture.com, which is great. And the other thing I'd say is when you look for those keywords, you're looking for the sweet spot online. So obviously you can find keywords that show that someone is actually looking to buy something. You're always looking for a keyword that suggests someone wants to buy something. How to prevent bird flu is a good keyword. Bird flu is not a good keyword. Bird flu prevention is a good keyword. You know, bird flu Ohio may not be a good keyword. So you're always looking for a keyword that suggests someone actually wants to buy something. And the second thing you look for is once you get those keywords, probably a good idea to go online, have a look around at who's ranking number one on Google and the first few on Google, and see if you can get there free. The other thing you can do is you can look at how much people are bidding for those keywords, because there's nearly always a sweet spot one way or the other. You can get search terms where the search engine optimization of pages is really poor, and that's easy to compete that way. And you get search terms where there's only a few people bidding for keywords, and even though the top bid might be quite high, once you get into the second or third, it can be quite low. I think Perry Marshall in his Google AdWords suggests you're looking for keywords where there's less than 8 advertisers, but has to be at least 3 or 4, otherwise the keyword's not worth bothering with. So yeah, great stuff. And I think you're going to go on to the next thing, which is the discussion forum technique.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the discussion forum technique is pretty valuable. And I want to share a short story that Corey Rudall actually first told at an internet marketing seminar that I was at. And that is that one of his first web businesses was a car web business, where he found a wholesaler, someone who could provide imitation car badges for high-end cars like Ferraris and Lamborghinis and Porsches. So he found this, you know, this little-known wholesaler. And what he thought. I mean, he had some friends who had, you know, Ferraris and these expensive cars, luxury cars, and they were saying one day through discussion, one of them said, look, the problem is, you know, we park outside a restaurant or a nightclub or, you know, really anywhere in the public, and some, you know, punk kid comes along and steals our badges, and, you know, they put them on their wall, they put them in their lockers at school, you know, it's kind of show off, oh, look what I stole. And if we want to go back to our dealer and actually get the badge replaced, it's really expensive. It's like $500-$600 to get that real badge put back on the car. And so one of his friends is telling him this, and he thought, wow, I wonder if this is a common problem. So he found a discussion forum for car lovers, and specifically for the more expensive luxury car lovers like Ferraris and Lamborghinis. So he went on to these forums where they had guys were talking about luxury cars, and he went on there and he said, guys, you know, my friends told me about this problem he has. Is this a common problem with you guys as well? And the answer was yes. And a lot of guys like, yes, 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 absolutely, this happens all the time. It's really a frustration of ours. And so he went back and said, look, if I could find someone who could provide these badges that you're getting stolen for, you know, much less than $500, a lot cheaper, would you buy them? And again, he was able to get a great response from the market just by asking the market he wants online. It's almost like a mini focus group. And the response is yes. And so he went back to the wholesaler, bought all of these car badges, bought, I don't know, like 1,000, 2,000 badges. And he went back on and he offered the badges for a much cheaper price. I think it was $150, $200 or something. And then, of course, he had a margin on there, so he made a profit. So that's just an example of going online, finding a discussion group that your market goes to. And you can locate these forums by going to www.groups.google.com and also www.groups.yahoo.com and simply typing in the name of your target market, like fly fishing or cage fighting or, you know, Ferrari discussion or really whatever your market is. And once you've found those forums, you can start reading all of the posts and pay attention to the questions being asked. And if you can't find any, then post on the forum and straight out ask, what problems are you guys having? And then see if you can fit the solution with your product. But it's a great way of going in. And it's almost like a free focus group for your market. And you can really, you know, read through, find out what they want, find out what problems they're having, and really get to know them by simply just asking. I think it's a great technique. Did you have anything you wanted to add to that, Andrew?
That example of the tags on the top of the car, which I heard too, I think at World Internet Summit, that is a really great example of finding a hungry market that's easy to get to. Often discussion forums, you have to be pretty cautious about what you try to sell to them. Usually, for example, you have to give them some free audio or something first off, and then let that lead to a page where you can get their email address in return for more free stuff, so that you don't piss off the whoever's running the forum by being too commercial. But in that case, it's a great example of finding a hungry market that's easy to get to, because no one was going to complain about the fact that you found them this great solution to a problem that was really driving them crazy. Now, I think we're going to go on to Jesse's secrets of using the book research technique. Jesse.
Yeah, absolutely. This is another great technique that I learned about a couple of years ago, which is we call it the book research technique. And this isn't a new technique. I mean, some of these things we're discussing on this call today are not new. Some people listening may already have heard these techniques, but really these are the techniques you want to use to research a market. And they may sound simple, but really they're the techniques that work. So the book research technique, this is where you go to Amazon.com and search for books associated with your target market. Once you've discovered some books, find out which ones are the most popular. I mean, you want to find out why these books are so popular. What topics are they covering that your prospects want to know about? And you can do all of this without buying the book. Amazon has some really cool features. I mean, they will let you view the front and back cover of the book and sometimes even read the table of contents and the first few pages. Now, I'll give you an example. One of my clients had an ebook they were selling on child problems. And what they did, they actually went to Amazon.com and they did a search for different child problems like ADHD and, you know, studying skills and all these different ways they could help, you know, children learn better and, you know, different problems they're having. And they actually found all of these books that had their own marketing. So some of these books had websites, some of these books they bought and actually read. And they found all of these problems even in the table of contents, often in the table of contents of certain books, they'll be directly answering problems. So you can really get a better understanding of your market by going online, going to Amazon.com, typing in, you know, whatever, you know, whatever product you sell or whatever business you're in. It could be, again, fly fishing or, you know, Ferraris or luxury cars or whatever your market is. Type it in, get all those books. Have a look closely at the books and see what problems they address. You know, some of the books might be, you know, how to stop your children from fighting, and you might not have considered that angle. So it's a great way of seeing what and spying on the competition and seeing what they're doing. And, you know, Amazon for free will let you look inside of those books just briefly. And so you can actually find out, you know, really in minutes what your competitors are doing, and you get that extra edge. Is there anything you wanted to add to that, Andrew? Because I know you're familiar with this technique as well.
Yeah, there's a few things. First of all, it's just an aside. If you're a copywriter, if you look at the table of contents in the book and the title, you often pick up some good headlines out of those table of contents. The other thing is that when you're looking at table of contents, if you're looking at a broader book, often the contents table will give you an idea of a niche that they're not hitting. So sometimes one chapter of a book is a great topic for a whole ebook of your own that will be tightly niched. So you might go, for example, from a diet book of some sort where they talk about a diet for and a particular group, let's say shift workers. So then all of a sudden you've got a great niche idea. Oh, I could do a diet book for shift workers, etc. Or a exercise program for shift workers, or something that's far more tightly niche that you can get to online much more easily, or you can find a list for. Anything that's going to make that market easy to get to, that's going to make things a lot easier for you. And I know, Jesse here, you have a great technique that you can use online to survey your market and to find some of those easy to get to markets.
Yep, absolutely. Before I get to that, I left one thing out with the last technique, the book research technique. And that is, Amazon will let you read reviews. You see, when you buy a book from Amazon, often after buying the book, they'll ask you to review the book. Will you write, you know, a short review on what you thought about the book? And will you rate it out of 5 stars? Now, what's great about that is, for a lot of these books you'll be looking at, you know, the competing books, you can actually, and then they display these reviews on their website. So you can actually go back to Amazon.com and you can read all of these reviews on the books. And often, you know, people will say in these reviews, you know, I was having these problems and then I read this book and, you know, now I'm not having these problems and it's fantastic and I learned this and this and this and all of this is so valuable to me. So it's like actually sitting around the dinner table with all of your prospects and listening in as they talk about their problems, about what they want to know, and then, you know, if the competitors' books and products actually fulfill those needs. I mean, this is really an undertapped resource that you can use to get into the minds through these reviews of your prospects, find out what they want to know, what problems they were having, and if those books actually gave the solution. So I think that's a great, great little underutilized technique.
Yeah, and something else when we were talking about that I forgot to mention. One of the biggest keys to selling anything, it doesn't matter whether you're online using copy or offline, is to provide a solution to what your prospect perceives as their unique need. So what you're actually looking for here is some sort of problem that they have that they're going to be willing to put money in their pocket to solve. And I know, Jesse, as I said before, I'm dying to hear this technique because I haven't used it a whole lot myself. You've got a technique to survey your market and find some of those problems.
Okay, absolutely. Now, this is a great technique. So this technique is not new. This technique has been around for quite a while. In fact, one marketer, Alex Mandoshian, who's a great copywriter in his own right, said that this technique is as old as Socrates himself. But there's a lot of different names for this technique, and one of the names is the flycatcher technique. And it basically goes like this. This is where you use Google AdWords to drive traffic to a simple one-page website that you've set up. Now, it's literally just a simple one-page site, and your headline on the page reads, free ebook for XYZ enthusiasts, you know, whatever enthusiasts. It could be, again, fly fishing, it could be, you know, what knitting, it could be anything. So the headline says, free ebook for XYZ enthusiasts. And then the body copy says, I'm putting together the finishing touches on an ebook that's all about blah, 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 you know, the topic. And I want to make sure that I haven't left anything out. So will you tell me the biggest question you have about XYZ, blah, blah, blah topic, even if you think it's silly? If you do, then I'll send you a free copy of the ebook when it's done. Then underneath that text, you have a box where people can write in their questions, or, you know, their biggest question they have about this topic. And then you have another two spaces or fields where they can type in their first name, email address, and then you have a button they press so that you get emailed that question that they filled in. Now, this technique is really valuable. I mean, think about it. Through Google AdWords, and again, if you're not familiar with Google AdWords and setting up web pages, you don't have to be. You can hire people to do that fairly inexpensively. I mean, this is really a valuable research tool that, you know, I've used, that a lot of marketers use to really, really research your market. And I'll give an example in just a moment. So what will happen is you'll have all these people coming to your website that are targeted because they typed in your keyword into the search engine, into Google or whatever, and then they hit your website and then they think, wow, I can get a free ebook. And then they'll tell you straight away what their main problem is. And I used this technique in the past for a niche website that I won't actually name, just because it's an extremely untapped niche that I don't want a lot of people going into, but we'll just say that it's for bird enthusiasts, right? So one day I had this idea. I think a lot of people want to know about a specific type of bird, let's say parrot, and that, you know, that's probably a really good niche market, you know, parrot enthusiasts. So what I did was I set up this basic one-page website, again, that says what I just told you, free ebook for parrot enthusiasts. You know, I'll send you a free ebook. Just tell me what your biggest question is about parrots. And then I had the box and email address and first name. So I drive all this traffic through Google AdWords. I get all these people arrive. And in 3 days, I had something like, I forget how many people. No, in 3 days, I had 300 people come to that website. And 15% of that 300, so it's about 50 people, I think it's 50 people, actually wrote down the biggest question they had about parrots. And some of the questions really, you know, threw me. They were the questions I would never, never imagine people would actually ask. And what I found was, out of those 50 questions, a lot of people were asking the same things, just in different ways. And what I did was, I took those 50 questions and I put them into, I found, you know, through all of these similar questions, I found 5 different questions people had. 5 of the most common questions seemed to be reoccurring. And then I went to a ghostwriter, which I found, and I said to the ghostwriter, here, I want you to research and write a book on parrots. And here are the questions, the 5, you know, most asked questions, and I want you to answer them in an ebook format. Go and do it. And I paid the guy, and in about a month later, I had a whole ebook written on the topic of parrots. And through those questions, I found out exactly what people wanted to know, like precisely in their own words. I don't think you can get really more interviewing your prospects better than that. And, you know, you can get some great feedback you would never even think about. So that's one technique. And again, it's called the flycatcher technique. You know, other marketers call it different things, and it's been around a long time, but it really works.
Yeah, another twist on that technique that I played with a couple of times. When we're talking about before, if you can't find easy terms to search engine optimize for and you look to joint venture with someone with a list, well, the question is, once you get to the point where you're going to joint venture with a list and you decide I'm going to niche a product for them, how do you do it? Well, if they're happy to do it, what you can actually do is send a survey to their list. So, and this is how you do it. Something along the lines of, hi, Bill, this is, and it's the guy who owns the list, and I have to tell you about Andrew. He's a fantastic health writer, appears on 40 radio stations across Australia, and he's decided he's going to put a free report together just for my readers, targeted for you guys, but I want to know what you want to know, and here's a list of things that he's willing to cover, and if you could, in the box here, if you could actually also tell us what you'd like to cover and any of your biggest questions you might have about health. So, and then of course, what you do is you write the free report that gives them teaser information, enough so that you've obviously given them some useful information, then you mail again and the free report leads into your ebook or your other information product. So it's along the same sort of lines, but that's another way of using a list instead of a website if you actually have access to a good list. The other thing is, when you're talking about surveying your market, there is actually a slightly more effective way than going online, and it's so pathetically obvious you want to kick yourself when I say it, and that is to actually talk to real live prospects and clients in person or on the phone. And I have to tell you, of all the things you'll do, this will probably be the most effective when you're writing copy and when you get to the point where your copy's actually finished and you want to see what it's like. If you're running a business and you have people you can call or talk to in person, here's some questions you can ask them that will help you hone in on the sort of information you need. First question, and incidentally, if you do call them up and just say, you know, I'm just doing a survey. I'm not trying to sell you anything or do any of that funny stuff. I just really would love your feedback and input. And if I could just ask you these questions. Why did you end up choosing my product? Or if it's a service, you say service, obviously. So why did you end up choosing my product? And what did you like? And wait, get their answers. What did you like about the approach I made? What finally persuaded you to make that decision to come on board? And at what point did you decide you're actually going to give me your money in return for my product? See, what you want to do is you want to find out where the buying triggers were. Then you can ask them, what did you dislike about the approach and the sales process I made? And you always take that with a grain of salt, because they might tell you something that's really left field, and if you know enough about direct response marketing, if you take their suggestions, you can get in trouble. But you can nearly always tweak things so that they work better, and sometimes there's some really obvious stuff, like you ask someone a question like that and they say, yeah, I tried to call you and I couldn't get you on the phone for 3 days. Now that's a real obvious problem where you can go back to your business and find out what's going on. Or I tried to email you and that email contact form on your site doesn't work. Very valuable information, right? So what did you dislike about the approach and sales process I used? And then how do you think I could have improved the way I persuaded you to use my product or to buy my product? Because that will give you some great ideas. The other thing you can do is you can talk to real life prospects. You may be in beta testing for making the product in the first place. And here's how you do it. You email all your friends and contacts or call people you know and just find someone who's a potential people who are potential prospects for your clients through the people you know. It's a much safer way of doing things. And obviously you don't want to get on the phone like survey people and call them randomly through the phone book. But if someone calls up a friend of theirs and says, oh, Jim just wants to do a bit of market research, could you talk to him on the phone for 10 minutes? That's going to be quite valuable, right? So you email all your friends and contacts, call them, explain what you're doing. You just want to interview people. You won't be making any attempt to sell anyone anything. And here's some questions you can ask prospects exactly along the same line. What have you bought? And we can do this with Jesse here. Let's just imagine I'm calling Jesse and I don't know him. And what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to sell a copywriting product. Can we do that, Jesse?
Absolutely. Go right ahead.
Okay. So, Jesse, what have you bought recently in the, say, $400, $500 price range?
Okay, about a copywriting product?
Well, yeah, let's do it that way if you can answer it that way. If not, about any marketing or any product related to the internet.
Okay. I recently bought a product on traffic generation, which was about $400.
Right. And why did you end up choosing that product?
I chose it because it was, unlike a lot of other products out there, this one seems to be from someone who really knew what they were talking about, not just one of those guru types who's always promoting something every week. This was like a real person who seemed someone who generally just wanted to help people and show them these techniques. It wasn't kind of a wham bam thank you man sale. It was from someone I guess I knew and I trusted.
Okay, so there's a big hot button right there. So we know in our market there's a very good chance if we emphasize the person that's selling it and their credibility and create a situation where they like to trust that person, that's going to help a lot. What did you like about the approach they made?
Well, the approach was similar to a lot of other people's approach. It was the, you know, standard web page with a long copy sales letter. So that was a similar approach to most other people. I guess what made it for me is that approach is the way of the approach, is the way how things were worded. It wasn't a lot of hype like a lot of other marketers use. It was fairly personal letter and it wasn't rah, rah, rah and or promise you the world. It was fairly low on hype. I think while it was still a web page and it was still a long copy sales letter, it just wasn't that direct to your throat, you know, I want your money now style.
How did you initially get to that sales page? Was it an email or did you get invited to a tele-seminar or a recording or what was the initial approach?
It was through an email, through a series of emails. It was, I guess you could call it a launch promotion.
All right, and it was from an email from someone you already knew or a list you were already on, obviously?
Yeah, it was from the actual, the owner and the promoter of the product, the creator of the product, and whose list I've been on for quite a while, and I guess you just get to know and trust people after a while. But yeah, through a series of emails is what got me to the website. And the actual way the website was worded, I guess, is what made me decide to buy it.
And how did you originally get on this list?
I think I stumbled across the website a couple of years ago.
Can you remember why you signed up back then?
Free. When something's free and it's something I want, I'll sign up.
Okay. So what persuaded you to finally make that decision to buy his product? At what point did you decide you're actually going to give him your money in return for his product?
I can't remember the exact point in the sales letter, but I can remember thinking, I trust this guy, I like this guy. One thing I always look for, of course, is a money-back guarantee, not because I'm going to use it, but because I think, well, if I get it, you know, something happens, it's just not what I want, then I can return it. That's always a biggie. You know, a lot of people offer these money-back guarantees, but I think it's often the way they're worded where you think, okay, this person's genuine. So what is the exact point? I think it's I was sold almost right when I got to the web page because I know this guy, I trust this guy. But the money-back guarantee, at that point in the letter, I always feel, okay, let's do it. And often I won't read the whole letter. It's just you kind of skim, scan, and scroll through the letter. But you read certain points and then you make your buying decision.
Did you have any kind of price justification? Because, I mean, $400 is a lot of money. Did you, in your mind, work out, for example, how much money you might make? Did it say that in the copy, those kinds of things? In comparison to spending $400, did you have an idea of how much you'd expect to get back out of it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It was, yeah, it's true. $400 is a lot of money. But I often think, well, what am I going to gain? I mean, if I can get, because I was thinking the whole time in my mind, if I get, you know, this amount of traffic, then how big will my list grow? You know, how many sales am I going to make if I can really get this kind of traffic that he's promising? Is it going to really change my life? And yeah, I guess it was at that point I thought, yeah, I want to buy it because if I can, it's something I really want to know because I think a lot of copywriters, they're great at what they do. They can really write their copy, really boost response, but a lot of them are clueless about traffic. And while I don't think I'm clueless, I could certainly learn some more things. So I guess that's what did it for me.
Okay, and what did you dislike about the approach and the sales process they used?
I think in copywriting, it can be a love and hate relationship. Some of the time, you know, because as copywriters, we're persuaders in print. We know we're trying to persuade people to, you know, act and to buy or subscribe or whatever. And so it's a love and hate relationship. Often when, you know, I watch TV, these info commercials come on and they say, you know, if you order today, then, you know, you'll be able to get it for this price. But if you wait, you know, the price may go up. Now, as someone who writes a lot of these myself, I know if I come next week, it's going to be the price. They're not going to deny me if I'm trying to buy from them. Or, you know, all of these free bonuses, but only if you act now, you know, they may not be around. The whole scarcity tactic. I'm desensitized to it because often I've read these offers before or I've created these offers myself, so often I'm desensitized. So when those tactics are being used on me, I respect them, but I also, it's a love and hate relationship where I think, okay, I know this isn't true, but I know he's just trying to make himself fair enough.
So I would know, for example, if I was writing to you to try sell something to you, I would heavily emphasize on the fact that you can trust me, you already know me, etc. You're going to get genuine value out of this, and I wouldn't be trying to use a scarcity tactic, but I may use something else that's a bit more believable. We'll go into that later, actually. That gets into the reason why you must buy a noun and the believability of the claims you make to get people to act now, but that's a really good point. And how do you think they could have improved on their sales process?
I guess that's a tough question to answer because I'm sold. I bought. So it's hard to think, how could they improve? Because I'm, you know, a raving fan now, I guess. How could they have improved? I don't know. You kind of stumped me on that one because I'm happy with the purchase. I'm not really sure. I think there's always ways people can improve. I think maybe being more personalized, maybe in the follow-up, like actually receiving the product, I think maybe they could have, you know, more than adding in free bonuses, maybe there could be more points of contact. That's dealing with, you know, after the sales service. So I'm not really sure.
That's a good point, actually. I like what you said there. More personalization. For example, they could have, at $400, they could afford to call you on the phone and say, you know, what do you think of the thing? And the other thing they could do is, if they're smart, they could use that phone call to create referrals, back-end sales, any number of other things out of you. They could even call you twice. They could call you just to make sure you got the product all right. Then they could say, we're going to call you again in a few weeks, if that's all right, just to make sure you're happy with the product, and then use that second call. So they've set up a chance where they can actually ask you for referrals, because you know quite a lot of people who would buy a traffic generation system. So anyway, that's just off the top of my head.
Yeah.
Now, we went through that whole process of me pretending that you were a prospect who I might have got contact through someone else, and it's amazing the information I got in just, I mean, that was like less than 5 minutes. So if you actually call half a dozen prospects that way, and I'm pretty lucky because my girlfriend's actually a yoga teacher. I'm doing a lot of copy at the moment for the American Vinyasa Yoga Institute. So I actually ask her to read all my copy, and I ask her, you know, what is it? Why is it you do this? Why is it you do that? What is it that made you spend tens of thousands of dollars on yoga training? But the point is, if you can get an actual conversation going on with a real live prospect, the information you get is far more realistic. You can ask for feedback on the things they say. It's more difficult to do by email. Email's great, but I can tell you now, you'll learn far more talking to people live. And I know Gary Halbert's, we talked about the coat of arms letter that it's been mailed, I think, over 400 million times, probably more than that by now. But I know that Gary Halbert says the thing that really turned that letter around was when he actually went out into the neighbourhoods where he was trying to mail his letters and actually sat down with three or four real prospects and asked them questions about the letter and said, you know, how would you respond to this? How would you react to that? And then after he made rewrites based on that real live prospect feedback, the letter just went ballistic. So just calling real prospects, access everybody you know, and build your little network of people that you can call for different kinds of things when you're writing copy, so that you look at, okay, where are the hot buttons? What are the problems of this market? Really get to know your market well and get to know people well when you're writing copy for them. And we're going to go into this in the next call, and that is online, your offer is everything. But talking to real life prospects is one of the fastest way to get to find out what sort of offer you should use. But I know, Jesse, you have something else you want to say.
Absolutely. And what I'd like to say on that last point of interviewing a prospect, and you know, that can be done online or offline, but I think, as Andrew mentioned, it's a lot more effective offline, where you actually call them and have a real life conversation. You know, no internet, just call them on the phone, it's you and them, or see them face to face. Now, there's an important point to this that can really make or break the process, which is, you want to put the chef in the kitchen. Now, what that means is this. If we're talking about a sales process, for example, just say that you're going to interview someone, like Andrew did with me, on buying something online, buying, you know, traffic generation product online. What Andrew wants to do, if we're meeting face to face or even on the phone, is he wants me to look at the marketing material before we actually speak. And by that, you're actually putting the chef in the kitchen. You're actually getting me into the state of the marketing material instead of having me remember it when it was long ago. So you could put that sales letter back in my hand, or tell me to go to a website, read through it, and then we could speak. And by doing that, I'm going to get back into the emotions of what it was like when I bought this. And I'm going to come up with a lot of things that I may have forgotten, or I may just, you know, slip my mind. So you want to get that person into that state. If you're going to review one of your letters, literally meet up with them, give them the letter, get them to read it and say, what do you don't like? Be honest, tell me straight. And that person will be in that, you know, in that state once again, instead of, you know, calling them a month later and saying, you know, do you remember what it was like? And they kind of, maybe they do, maybe they don't. So get them into the state, put the chef back in the kitchen. And I think that's really a good way of finding out.
The other thing you should do is observe. If you're going to get someone to read your sales letter or anything to do with your product and it's written, observe their reactions while they're reading. Don't make it obvious that you're doing it, but watch, because you'll notice if you have good writing that's getting their attention, for example, their breathing will change, the way their posture will change, and you can actually pick up quite a lot about, and they might flinch at something, or, you know, you can pick up quite a lot about what's going on in their head just by really, really paying attention, you know, to the way they're reacting as they go. And they may not remember it consciously afterwards, but then you can make a mental note. He seemed to be out there and he flinched, so you can make a mental note and ask them after they've read it, you know, what was that about? What made you flinch? Or, you know, you were sort of really into it at some point there, and they'll probably go, oh yeah, I remember that. So yeah, that's a really, really great point. Obviously sometimes we may not have copy to give them, so we're just going to have to ask them more broad questions like I did there, where we're actually trying to define what we should be selling in the first place and so forth. But you're quite right, and if we talk about something that they bought in the past and we can find the sales letter from what they bought, or the promotional material from what they bought in the past that we're actually not selling, again, that's really valuable too. A great, great point.
Yeah, absolutely. And just one final comment on that. I think it's important to get them into the state, but it's also just important to pre-frame it. I mean, if you just call them up and say, look, I just want to find out why you bought our product, you mind if I ask you a few questions, blah, blah, blah. Often these people will be, and I'll give you an example, often these people will be hesitant to tell you the truth. I have a friend who does dating workshops where he takes, you know, this group of guys and he, you know, teaches them about women, about dating and communication skills. And his business has gotten so big that he now actually can't be in all of the cities doing all of these workshops at once. So he has guys who he's personally trained go and do them in different cities. Now, big mistake in his company is that after these workshops, he requires his coaches to get feedback. So he'll give out, well, he'll get his coach to hand out the feedback forms to all of the attendees and say, guys, fill them out now. Now, the problem with that is the customer is filling out what they think about the person who's standing right in front of them, and in just a moment will be holding and quite possibly reading the feedback. And a lot of these people don't want to offend the actual person. So if you're going to do this and get feedback from your customers, you have to do it in such a way where if they want, they can either remain anonymous, which is might be a little bit difficult, but also at the end of the day, your outcome is you just want them to be honest. And you might want to preface that on a call by saying, look, you can be 100% honest here, or, you know, tell me what you really think and get some real feedback. You want to do some kind of preface there so they don't feel bad about hurting your feelings.
Absolutely. One of the other things you do over time is you build up a network of people you can call who know you just want this plain, cold, hard truth. You don't want any bullshit. Just tell them exactly what they think. And that's another thing is over time you'll get some people who just, you know, you can go for real feedback. And as a business person, you should be looking for that anyway if you're actually in business for yourself, because you want people. You don't want to be spending a fortune on something and have people around you who are yes men saying, oh yeah, it's just wonderful. That's the last thing you want. It's a great way to lose a lot of money. Anyway, so we're going to go back to the fundamental behind that, which is finding a hungry market and then really getting to know the wants and needs of your prospects in your hungry market before you even write a word of copy, and often before you even produce the product to begin with. In some cases, it's actually easier to make over the product and then try and sell it than it is to try and sell a product that's been poorly conceived in the first place. So next call, we're going to talk about the offer and how you create an offer, why online your offer is everything, and why being online actually changes the kinds of offers that you can make, And I believe Jesse has some fantastic case studies of risk reversal offers. And I am going to share with you the secret of one of my clients whose average sale online is $700. So that's something you're really going to want to listen in for. Jesse, you have any last words?
Yeah, I do. I think the next call is something people really want to look out for, because an offer is, I mean, some marketers have said that the offer is the whole reason why you're writing the sales, your sales copy, and that really the sale is made or not made at the actual offer. So we're going to cover some really brilliant points. We're going to talk about some of the most successful offers. We're going to share case studies with you of just changing an offer slightly that has doubled, tripled sales. So it's really an important call. And so, yeah, you want to be listening in on that one.
And Jesse has one final bonus tip for you at the end of this call, just to keep you really hot so you'll be ready for the next call about offers. Jesse, you've got one final tip about finding a hungry market, getting the hungry market, and getting to know your prospects better.
This technique is really great, and this is how to get honest feedback. You can go, let's say you're an internet marketer. I think it's something a lot of people are familiar with. You're an internet marketer, and you're thinking of putting on your own seminar about internet marketing. Now, you want to know why people go to these internet marketing seminars. And sure, you've been to a few yourself, but you really want to hear from other people, you know, prospects, your prospects, why they turn up to these events. What is it specifically that gets them there? What are their hot buttons? Here's what you do. You go to some of the a lot of these seminars, you know, a couple of months before the actual seminar, they'll have free introductory nights. And you can go to these free introductory nights. It won't cost you anything. They'll try and sell a seminar from that free seminar. That's the whole purpose of it. But what you can do is you can turn up to these, and suddenly you're just showing up as an attendee, and you're sitting amongst all of the prospects. Now, in the break, it should be your job to go and speak with as many of those people as possible and just interview them. Pretend you're just curious. Just say, hey, you know, why did you decide to come tonight? And, you know, are you going to sign up? Are you going to go to the main event? Really, what is it that you liked about tonight? What were you hoping to learn? What, you know, kind of made you sign up? Just interview them as another attendee, just being curious about somebody else. Then if you like, if you want to take this further, go to the actual seminar. You know, in that room there might be 400 people, and you can, you know, make your way around the seminar in the breaks. Just ask people, why did you come? What made you come? What are you hoping to learn? What problems are you having? What are your sticking points? And there's no hesitation, because they don't know, because you're kind of undercover and you're investigating. And again, it could be for any market. If you're a plumber, if you're a martial arts expert, you can go to each of these different industry events and seminars, trade shows, whatever, and just interview people, and they'll never know, and therefore they'll tell you the honest truth, because you're simply investigating undercover. So that's another great way of doing that.
Yeah, I did exactly the same thing. I mentioned it to you before, Jesse, where I went to American Vinayoga Institute teacher training and actually lived there for 2 weeks. And every breakfast, lunch and dinner, I was probably speaking to these people who paid somewhere between $10,000 and $20,000 for training over the course of their training. And of course, I asked them all sorts of great questions, like, you know, how did you first get into yoga? Why did you come to this class? And here's another thing that just occurred to me when you're saying that. If you were, for example, selling an internet seminar or any other product that already has a good sales page online for someone else, one thing you could do is you could actually go online and have a look at the testimonials, because sometimes in those testimonials you can actually pick out quite a lot of people's hot buttons as well. So testimonials, and we're going to talk a lot about, at some point I'm going to talk about how testimonials can create great headlines and everything. But the most important point, as we get back to that, is finding a hungry market, getting to know your prospects in that hungry market and what their hot buttons are. And next week we're going to cover the offer.